This is Fresh Air. Terry Gross is out sick. I'm Barbara Bogave. Today we're looking back on the best films and music of the past year. Later on we'll hear Fresh Air music critic Ken Tucker's picks, but first critic David Edelstein weighs in on the best movies of 2002. Edelstein is the film critic for the online magazine Slate, and he reviews films for Fresh Air.
David Edelstein, welcome to Fresh Air. Let's start with the official reading of your 10 best list.
All right. These are not in any particular order, and there I want to emphasize that there is no best because I can't really decide which movie I like best, and tomorrow it will be different than today. But they are The Pianist, Triumph of Love, Time Out, Chicago, Far From Heaven, Talk to Her, Domestic Violence, Y Tu Mama Tambien, Igby Goes Down, Lovely and Amazing. And that's 10, and this is a Spinal Tap 10 best list. It goes to 11, but I want you to put a little asterisk next to this movie, and it's Gangs of New York, and I'll explain what the asterisk means sometime later.
David, there's several foreign films on your 10 best list. Let's start with the new Pedro Almodovar movie, Talk to Her.
Yeah, well, you know, this is one of the year's best romances, despite the fact that the women are in a coma.
It begins literally?
Literally, yes. It begins in a very flat, unassuming way, and you have no idea if you're going to see Douglas Sirk or it's going to be inspirational or if it's going to be campy. It just kind of pulls you in. So before you know it, you're in the heads of these two men who keep worshipful vigils beside the beds of these two comatose women. And the movie ends up being a kind of meditation on the way in which couples communicate or don't. As well as a study in loneliness, as well as the story of a friendship based on little but shared longing for the unattainable. Now, Almodovar usually kind of leads with his perversity, but this time he's very sneaky about it. So the movie kind of swallows you whole before you realize just how outlandish the whole thing is.
It's interesting. Almodovar seems to really love Douglas Sirk melodramas, just as Todd Haynes, the director of Far From Heaven, does. So do we have two films on your 10 best list this year that in their own way pay homage to the melodramas of the 50s?
We do, although I think they're very, very different, because I think that that Todd Haynes, everything is framed. Everybody is seen in mirrors or seen through glass. There's always a sort of ironic distance. Whereas Almodovar is just completely inside his movies, whatever he's doing. He's kind of thinking through them from the inside. He's allowing the movies to find their own form. And that's why his movies are all different. That's why a lot of people are going to be surprised that this one is so quote-unquote straight, because it almost seems to sort of emerge out of his passion for the ideas and for the people.
Okay, two more foreign films on your 10 best list, Time Out, a French film, and Y Tu Mama Tambien, a Mexican film.
Well, Time Out is an interesting movie. It's the best movie, I think, in what I think of as the year of living fraudulently. I don't know if it's the upshot of the collapse of the new economy, but there are a lot of really entertaining movies around, like Catch Me If You Can and Confessions of a Dangerous Mind in Chicago, that are about hustlers, some of them deluded hustlers who actually believe their own scams. And Laurent Canté's Time Out sort of falls into that category. It's about a con man, but not in the American David Mamet flim-flam tradition. This is a former hotshot consultant who now drives around and sleeps in his car and makes appointments and sells investments in things that don't exist, and he kind of wanders the bars of international hotels in a sort of stupor, because that's what he once did, and that's all he knows how to do. And the movie kind of implies that one's source of income has become so disconnected from the physical world that there's no apparent difference between what he does now mindlessly and absurdly and what he did as a real consultant. Lefty European directors can be very irritating when they rail against the inherent injustice of capitalism, but sometimes I think they're the only ones who actually bother to scrutinize the system for all its absurdities.
It's funny, so many people refer to that movie, Time Out, as being a movie about the alienation of contemporary work. And I thought, well, maybe, but it seems to me this character is really having a nervous breakdown that may or may not have anything to do with work.
Definitely. And yet, isn't it wonderful, though, when you find a movie in which somebody's neurosis or psychosis manages to dovetail with something going on in the culture at large?
Right.
That's what I thought that movie was. I thought in a way that they were inseparable.
Can I confess I found that movie just really tedious?
Yeah, I had a feeling. it is a little boring. I think you have to kind of get on its wavelength. I mean, a lot of movies I like this year are a little bit boring. Solaris, I maintain, is just a beautiful and devastating and tragic movie that, you know, you just have to kind of relax and kind of go with the angst, go with the ennui. That's a movie that I could see a lot of people being very frustrated by.
And what about Y Tu Mamá También? What did you like about that film?
Well, for one thing, it has the most creative use of narration of any film the entire year. I as just an aside here, I'm 10 years ago when narration was a big Hollywood no-no, I always made a point of saying there's nothing inherently cinematic about it. You have movies like The Magnificent Ambersons and you have some of the great film noirs in which narration works in a kind of marvelous, ironic counterpoint to the images on the screen. But now that it's become a fashion, I mean, every single movie you go to is narrated. It seems like we're watching a bunch of slideshows in which the screenwriters are telling you things that they ought to be showing you. The exception to this, the most creative use of narration, is Y Tu Mamá También, which is about these two horny teenagers who go on a road trip with a kind of dishy married woman to a remote Mexican beach. And along the way, the narrator interjects things about the places they pass and the people they see. And the implication is that the boys have no notion of the corrupt class system and the economic exploitation that is, in fact, fueling their little sex comedy. And by the end, Cuarón demonstrates, I think, that a teen sex comedy through the magic of cinema can expand in ways that we never thought possible. It's a study of sexual mores. It's a political allegory. It's a story about the impermanence of life. And it's a great teen sex comedy.
The Roman Polanski movie, The Pianist, is on your list. What's Polanski been up to?
Well, I think it's important, before I talk about The Pianist, which might be my favorite movie of the year, to say that, you know, the man is a sex criminal and a fugitive from American justice. And, you know, I feel funny talking about what I think is a great and moral movie, maybe the most moral movie about the Holocaust I've ever seen, while having very, very unresolved feelings about the man who made it. When you see a movie like this, you see that this man who escaped from the Krakow ghetto when he was a boy, he lost two families in one lifetime. You can feel he's been through a hell that few of us can imagine. And if he hadn't screwed up his life, and also the life of a young girl, I should add, and stayed in Hollywood with access to American capital, who knows what he might have done. That said, this is a great movie. It's a classical movie, but it's also radical in its perspective. What it is is the Holocaust viewed from this weird side angle. It's about a Jewish pianist, Vladislav Spilman, who manages to stay in the Warsaw Ghetto when his whole family is shipped off to Treblinka. Then he manages to slip out of the Warsaw Ghetto before the uprising that kills virtually everyone he knows. Now, Lena Wertmüller, you might remember a movie she made called Seven Beauties in the 70s that presented a survivor as the ultimate moral sellout. But that's not what Polanski is up to here. This is a very non-judgmental movie that respects the audience enough to know that the instinct for survival transcends moral categories and comes with its own set of horrors. And it's also a real Polanski movie. You know, it's about being trapped. It's about having this terribly limited vantage and going quietly mad. And Adrian Brody, who plays Spilman, has this finicky refinement in the first half. He tries to keep playing Chopin when the bombs are falling nearby. And watching him reduced to a sort of animalistic state by the end is just overwhelming.
Now, another movie on your 10 best list is the musical Chicago, which is an adaptation from the Broadway musical. And this has, like, singing by Richard Gere and Catherine Zeta-Jones, Renee Zellweger. It seems to me it's been a long time since a Broadway musical was adapted into a film, maybe like Evita being the most recent.
Oh God, I tried to repress that. this is the best movie musical in many a year. How's that? Is that a good ad quote? Mm. It's important to say that the musical numbers are out to kill you. I mean, it's one colossal showstopper after another. And I saw it at a screening that was like a big party. There were lots of musical comedy queens, and I'm a bit of a repressed, latent musical comedy queen myself. And I thought people were going to tear the theater apart. And I'm not usually crazy about the kind of chop, chop, chop school of film musicals. You know, where do you know those movies where all the dances are cut into a million pieces and there isn't any gesture that's really allowed to be completed? That's what drove me nuts about Moulin Rouge, which I thought was sort of a monument to attention deficit disorder. But the director here, Rob Marshall, he's a choreographer, and he really knows how to edit the dance so that the cuts kind of extend the dance gesture, which is the way Bob Fosse did it in Cabaret. It's an ugly movie. It's overcrowded at times, but boy, Catherine Zeta-Jones has musical comedy chops. You know, you don't expect her to have that hunger. And really, the whole cast just looks like they're, you know, working their butts off and having a great time. And so did I. I think audiences are going to go crazy for it.
Okay, and then finally, you have your asterisk film at the bottom
yes.
of your 10. That's the Gangs of New York.
The asterisk.
Yes.
The
why?
Asterisk.
Why are you hesitating to commit?
Well, okay. I don't really think it's one of the year's 10 best, but I want to reserve the right, if I ever see Martin Scorsese's 3.5-hour cut or 4-hour cut, to kick something else off my list. Fiddling with one's 10 best list is one of the great onanistic pleasures of film criticism. And so normally I like to deal with what's on screen, but in the case of Gangs of New York, you have this strange tribal blood feud melodrama with hints of something so much larger around the edges. The movie builds to the New York draft riots, which Scorsese seems to think effectively dealt a mortal blow to the sort of medieval tribalism that had marked the previous era and that we've been watching for 3 hours. And the problem with the movie is that all the stuff building to the draft riots has been snipped per, I assume, Harvey Weinstein or someone at Miramax to bring out the romance and Cameron Diaz and the blood feud. And so the climax seems to come out of nowhere. Even though in its truncated form, I can't think of many other American movies that attempt to portray the sweep of historical forces in the manner of Bertolucci or Visconti the way this one does. Also, it's pretty entertaining, especially... it's especially fun to see Daniel Day-Lewis back as this bizarre, top-hatted, psychotic dandy.
David, one of the films that is not on your list, one of the most successful, surprisingly successful films on the year, is My Big Fat Greek Wedding. I'm sure you've seen the movie. What do you think of the film, and what do you think its success says either about movies or about moviegoers?
Well, I should say I like the movie. I think it's in a long and honorable tradition of very broad ethnic intermarriage comedies. And I was so pleased to see Andrea Martin, who's one of the great underused comic geniuses, have a chance to cut loose in the role of Aunt Vula. But what's most interesting about the movie is, in fact, its success. It was adapted from Nia Vardalos's one-woman show, and it has a very public live theater feel to it that really appealed to an older, more middle-brow audience hungry for the sort of community theater experience that the big youth-oriented blockbusters aren't giving them. They loved the way the movie reached out to them, and they loved that they could reach back and make it a $200-plus million phenomenon. In a bizarre way, I think its audience found it an empowering movie.
Film critic David Edelstein talking with Terry Gross. We'll hear more of their conversation about the year in film after this break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, we're featuring an interview Terry recorded with film critic David Edelstein about the films of the past year.
Do you have a runners-up to your 10 best list?
I think it's been a great year for Steven Spielberg. I think 7/8 of Minority Report, you know, until it has this sort of Murder, She Wrote, whodunit ending, is just a really exciting and fun kind of fantasia on themes of Philip K. Dick. And the new one, Catch Me If You Can, is just a sort of delightful a parable about a hustler who ends up being absorbed by the system and then becoming somebody who chases hustlers with some terrific performances. I liked The Believer, Henry Bean's film about a neo-Nazi who also happens to be a Jew. It's a movie that I wouldn't want to diagram. It's really, this guy's psyche is just all over the place. But I've never seen a movie sort of grapple, sort of fetishize self-hatred and the sort of strange contortions that somebody goes through trying to get away from their own religious identity and embrace it at the same time in a way that movie does. It's a talk about a fearless and unresolved movie. And then, of course, there's Spirited Away, which is a full-length animation by the director of Princess Mononoke. And this is an extraordinary animated film that is in some ways in a sort of allegory of Japanese businesses, Japanese corporate practice, which actually happens to be about a young woman who kind of falls through the looking glass. Her parents turn into pigs, and she enters into what's sort of a kind of brothel that caters to monsters, and has to sort of fight her way through it and get her parents back and return to normalcy. It's still a movie that I'm still trying to figure out what it meant. You know, I'm still trying to, but I've never seen anything like it.
A lot of people like to stay home on the holidays and rent videos or DVDs. So, David, I'm wondering if there's a particular movie that you feel really helped shape you, that you've watched over and over and over again over the years, that you'd maybe want to recommend as good home viewing.
There are two films I would watch above all others during the holiday season. One, of course, takes place during the holidays, and it is The Shop Around the Corner, which I believe has just come out in DVD, with James Stewart and Margaret Sullavan as these people who work side by side in a perfumery in Budapest, who detest each other, but in fact are, as it turns out, soulmates, and correspond blindly with each other and bare their souls and say all the things that they can't say when they're side by side. It, of course, was remade as You've Got Mail, but we don't have to think about that. We can repress that if we choose, and I would like to repress it. And it also was remade as a rather nice musical called She Loves Me. The other is Preston Sturges's great The Lady Eve, which is in which Barbara Stanwyck plays a card shark who falls in spite of herself for Henry Fonda as this young and endearingly helpless rich boy. And it really is about how the person that we fall in love with is never quite as good as we think they are, but they're never quite as bad as we think they are either, which is, I think, the most wonderful thought that we can all take into the holidays.
Well, David, I wish you happy holidays, and thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Terry.
David Edelstein is film critic for the online magazine Slate, and he reviews films for Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air.